Welcome to the Very Pink Knits podcast, the companion podcast to the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel. I'm Stacy and I'm here with Casey.
Hi there.
Casey's the media manager here at Very Pink and she's also producing this show. If you'd like to get your knitting question on the show, just email it to podcast@verypink.com and please include where you're from. And if you want to see links and pictures to the things we talk about, we'll be sure to put those things in the show notes. And you can access the show notes by going to verypink.com and clicking on the podcast tab at the top of the page. And this is episode 82, so the stuff we talk about will be under the heading of podcast episode 82. And we are going to get into magically turning knitting questions into knitting answers, but we have a very cool interview first.
Yes, we do. I met with Emily of Reunion Yarn.
Reunion Yarn.
Mm-hmm.
Is it reunionyarn.com?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Actually, I found her on Instagram, and you know how you just kind of find people on Instagram. And she repurposes yarn from sweaters, and she actually hosts workshops on how to do it yourself.
So. Like finding an old sweater and unraveling it and reusing the yarn.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a great idea.
Yeah.
I actually know people who are in. I want to hear this.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
You can do it.
I'm Emily Felix. I am the founder of Reunion Yarn Company. And under Reunion Yarn Company, I've launched a website called Unraveling Club that you can go to, and it teaches you how to unravel used knitwear and get yarn.
Cool. So how did you start this? What was the inspiration?
So in 2013, I started getting my graduate degree at the Savannah College of Art and Design. And I was in the fibers program, and I really struggled with what to do. I was really interested in sustainability, but I didn't really know how to apply it to making art. And I was also very poor at the time, as most students are. And I stumbled on a tutorial on Pinterest, which was how to unravel a sweater and get yarn. And I thought that's an awesome idea. Because pretty much my whole life, I've been really into thrifting. Most of my clothing is from thrift stores. So I tried it and I completely destroyed tons of sweaters, but I finally figured it out. And at the same time, I was taking a course. SCAD has a design for sustainability program. And I was taking a sustainability theory course. And in class one day, I was working on a sweater, trying to take it apart. And everybody was super interested in what I was doing. And they were just like blown away. And up to that point, I hadn't even thought about the process as being that interesting. I just was kind of looking at it as, you know, I'm just getting some yarn.
Right.
But then when I started to think about it, I was like, you know what, this is amazing. This is like the coolest thing ever. So I started unraveling more sweaters and I started writing more about it, as you do when you're getting a master's degree, so much writing. And then I realized that I didn't even enjoy making anything out of the yarn. I just really was having so much fun just unraveling yarn and seeing that transformation happen between having a really old, outdated, ugly sweater, and then you take the yarn out of that context and it's basically brand new yarn. It's totally usable. And at the same time, I was researching sustainability and the issues that our world currently has with used clothing and just all the statistics with that, and super depressing. And just realizing that I wanted to try to do something to change that. So that's how my business came to be.
Very cool. So you sell the repurposed yarn?
You know, I graduated in 2015 and we moved, and right before graduation, I had written a business plan to start a business selling recycled yarn. So when we moved, I launched it. I was selling stuff. We were doing markets, and I was doing that for about 2 years. It's very, very labor intensive, because when you unravel a sweater, the yarn, it's yarn that's made for machine knitting. So it's different from hand knitting. But I was selling to people who were knitting and crocheting by hand. So when you unravel yarn from a sweater, it's usually I'd say probably about 85% of the time it's unplied. So it's basically like, you know, five or six or less, or maybe even more little tiny thin strands that are knit together. Mm-hmm. So when you're knitting, for example, you're always splitting the strands. Mm. It's very frustrating. So I was replying everything by hand.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, the thing is, I found it incredibly gratifying and fun, but it wasn't sustainable because it was just taking too long. And, you know, I can't charge $50 for a skein of yarn.
Right.
Well, I could, but nobody would buy it. So, right. So 2 years into that, at the same time I was pregnant, found out I was pregnant and realized, okay, I can't keep doing this all day long and have a baby. So that's when I decided to stop making the yarn and focus on launching my website, Unraveling Club, to teach other people how to do it for themselves.
So what are, you know, if I wanted to start doing this, what would be like your top three or five tips for starting to unravel?
Well, my very first tip would be do research before you go buy sweaters, because not all commercially made sweaters or knitwear in general is unravelable in the sense that we're trying to get something that's like, you know, you have an arm panel, for example. You want to be able to detach that arm from the sweater and pull out the yarn so that you're getting one long strand of yarn. So educate yourself on the two different types of sweater manufacturing. There's cut and sew, which basically they take a bolt of knit fabric, cut the shape, and then sew it together, which is not what you want. And then there's fully fashioned, which is the each panel of the sweater is knit in the shape that it's meant to be. So each panel, therefore, is one long strand of yarn.
Right.
And I would recommend, I mean, you can find tutorials anywhere. You can look it up on Pinterest. My website, Unraveling Club, the first couple of lessons are free. You can sign up for a free trial at the very least. And just, I've made it very explicit, like what to look for.
Yeah.
Because it is frustrating when you go out, you're at a thrift store, you think, oh, I want to unravel this. And then you come home and you realize that you've wasted your money. Yeah. So educate yourself first. The next major tip is just put the scissors down. Don't start cutting. And this is the biggest mistake I made at first, because all the tutorials I was finding were people saying cut up the seam to detach each panel. Well, when you cut up a seam, you're cutting the yarn. So you're not going to get those long single strands of yarn. You're just going to end up with yarn with a bunch of knots in it. So it's kind of like the measure twice, cut once rule. But in this case, it's more like really, really figure out what's going on with the garment before you take scissors and start cutting. Because if you have something like 100% cashmere and you just completely destroy the seams with scissors, you're going to be very mad at yourself once you realize that there's a better way. That's the biggest tip I have. And also, it's just like most textile things, you really need to be patient with yourself. You're learning a new skill. It's not as easy as it sounds. It's very rewarding. And I recommend that everybody try it at least once. But you really just need to take your time. And if you find yourself getting frustrated, just take a breath, walk away, you know, like get a cup of tea or something and then come back to it later.
Yeah. So once you start the pulling, do you use like a ball winder to get it going, or do you do it all by hand?
At first I was just winding it by hand. It's faster. It does depend on what type of fiber it is and how easily it comes apart. But yeah, I use a ball winder a lot. You can also use like a skein winder, like an automatic skein winder, yeah. Especially if it's fragile, if it's, say it's like a vintage, very fine cashmere, you don't want to use a skein winder or something, because that cashmere most likely has kind of started to stick to itself over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And as you go to pull it out, there's going to be some friction. So you don't want to just start ripping it out, because then you're going to rip the yarn in half.
Yeah.
But if it's something sturdy like cotton or even a synthetic, then, you know, ball winder would be great.
So what's the best find you ever found? Best score, I guess.
Oh, man. I've unraveled so many sweaters. I don't honestly, this is going to sound cheesy. I don't think there's like one particular sweater that particularly stands out, because honestly, like there are so many good finds out there that every time I go thrifting for a sweater or somebody donates one to me, and I really love the old ugly stuff, like the stuff from the 80s with like shoulder pads and like the ugliest sweater you could possibly imagine. Because when you unravel it and you take the yarn out of that context, it's yarn. I mean, it looks like new yarn. And for me, that's just so satisfying. I'm always surprised at the yarn that comes out of this stuff. It's just so gratifying.
Yeah, I can imagine. And it's just so nice that you're making something that's so hideous into something nice again.
Yeah, and it never fails. Every time it happens, I'm always impressed. I'm like, whoa. But especially like black, like if you imagine, say you have like a black cotton sweater from, you know, the 80s or 90s, and it's really faded.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, because when you unravel it, the yarn, you would think, oh, the yarn's going to look faded, but it never does. It's so crazy. It looks, and I think it's because if you think about like a knit structure, it's interlocking, like the yarn interlocks itself. So the color you're seeing on the front is actually only about a third of the color of the entire length of yarn, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So even if it's faded on the outside, the stuff that's crossing over on the very inside of that knit structure, that hasn't seen the light of day. And when you unravel it, it's just magical.
That's so cool. Well, I love this. So are you still doing workshops, or I saw you had like one spot left or something like that? Where are your workshops? And if somebody wanted to sign up, how could they find you?
So I do in-person workshops occasionally. I'm in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So we get a lot of people from like Nashville and Atlanta. We're kind of centrally located. And I do a lot of workshops at my friend Casey's farm. She has an alpaca farm nearby. It's called Fiber Farm. You should look it up. She's amazing. But I'm actually moving to Virginia now in about a month. So I'm going to start trying to do workshops around that area. I don't really do traveling workshops, or I haven't yet, but that's actually the main reason why I started my online workshop, Unraveling Club, because people kept asking me, you know, how do you do this? And I would tell them about my workshop at Casey's farm, and they'd be like, well, I live in California. I can't come to Nashville and you know, I completely understand that. And I just really wanted people to be able to do this themselves. And I knew that I could do a better job explaining how to do it the right way compared to like all the tutorials that are out there and the ones that I followed at first, because there's, you know, like it's great, they're out there and they're free, but they're not the best. So I really spent a lot of time on my website just trying to get illustrations and videos and making sure that it was just as good as being at an in-person workshop.
Well, that's awesome. Okay, well, we'll direct people to your site. And I really like the idea of making something that's not pretty anymore back into something pretty again. And it's not just about saving money.
Yeah, and it's just, it's so cool. I mean, it's just, I can't even describe it.
That's awesome. Well, maybe some of our listeners will give it a try.
Yay. Thank you so much for inviting me to do the podcast with you.
Yeah, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for that, Casey.
Sure.
I know a lot of people I follow on Facebook, I'm friends with on Facebook, they do this. Mm-hmm. and they get a ton of yarn, and it's very cool. And it's like cashmere and stuff. Yeah. It's nice yarn.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice.
And it's a nice way, you know, like the whole, I think, trend of being careful about having being too wasteful in our clothes, or, fast fashion and things like that.
The slow clothing movement.
Yes. So it's a nice way to kind of be a little bit more conservative and not buying more, consuming less.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go ahead and get into some knitting questions.
Okay. Hello, girls. Greetings from the fancy Europe. That's from back when I had my fancy European bag.
Yes, I know exactly what she's talking about. But since then, we've made references to things from Europe being fancy.
Yes. I'm a Spanish girl living in Italy. I follow you in all your adventures. You're the perfect teacher, making everything so easy
to... The perfect teacher.
Yeah. Making everything so easy to understand. I owe you all my capacities as a knitter. Thanks from the heart. Recently, I bought this amazing wool coming from the earthquake zone of the center of Italy named Abruzzo. They ask people to buy their products so they can start living again after the disaster, and I think that's a great attitude.
Wow.
I think I read about that.
I think we need to Google this.
I read about, I think it was Parmesan cheese, too, or something like that.
What? Oh, they're just like...
There was some cheese that was from the earthquake zone, and they were trying, or I don't know, maybe I'm making that up. It says the oiling of the staple in the production phase is carried out with extra virgin olive oil, and the producer recommends working the wool with wooden needles. I would like to make socks out of it, and my question is if the stainless steel needles can be a good choice, or it can be a problem because of the grip. Let's answer that. She's got another question.
That first. I would say this is my experience, and other people might disagree with this, but every time I've used wood sock needles, meaning tiny needles made out of wood, I break them. And I'm not even a death grip knitter. And so socks on sock needles using this yarn, wood needles, might not be the greatest choice. Mm-hmm. But I don't see why it would be a problem to use metal needles.
It might be slippery because of the oil.
It might be slippery. It would only make it go faster. It'd be like greased lightning knitting.
Oil your knitting.
What do you think?
I mean, it depends, I think, always on the needle and the yarn. Just try it. And if you feel, because sometimes when I'm knitting with metal needles, it feels like I don't have control. It's usually big ones.
Right.
So I don't know. For sock size, I would do stainless.
Have you ever used wood needles for socks?
Yeah. I was using a 9-inch circular that I picked up somewhere, and it was wood. And I didn't like it because I was holding it too tight or something.
9-inch circular is different than DPNs, though, in that you're not... The 9-inch circular needle part's only like an inch long. Mm-hmm. But if you're using 6-inch long DPNs in like a size 1 or 0, it's smaller than a toothpick.
Yeah, I've used it when I made my tiny turtle. I talked about
right, your tiny turtle that keeps coming up on the podcast.
Yeah, so I have used it, and I've made some other little tiny things. Like
you
that.
Didn't break the needles?
Mm-mm, I don't think so.
Huh, okay. Mm-hmm. And I've even ordered... this is years ago. I ordered sock DPNs, wood sock DPNs. People were raving about. They were ebony wood.
Mm.
And they had to ship them to me 3 times because the needles broke twice.
In shipping?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah. And I just found this beautiful Abruzzo wool, Abruzzo, online. So
we might have to order some.
We might. Oh, geez. It's for a good cause.
For a good cause.
It's really pretty yarn. I mean, it looks like nice, basic yarn, and it's for a good cause. Okay. Anyway, she has another question.
Okay. My other question is if in your socks patterns, I can change the German short rows with the Japanese short rows. I watched your video tutorial about this, and I think it's easier.
Yes, if you are comfortable making little modifications to patterns, any short row technique, whether that's wrap and turn, German short rows, Japanese short rows, anything else you can think of, any short row technique can be substituted for any other. It's the main purpose is to be able to turn the work without leaving a hole in the work, and so you can use whichever one you like best.
Mm-hmm. And that was from Maria in Milan, Italy. Fancy Italy.
Fancy. Okay.
Hi, Stacey and Casey. I wanted to start by saying thank you for your videos. They taught me how to knit and are always my go-to videos. I'm loving your podcast and always love listening to you both. My question is the following. I'm knitting more socks, but I'm finding after they are done, they stretch out a lot. I just finished a pair of socks for my fiance out of Regia, and they are knit out of 2.5 millimeter and fit perfectly when they are done, but after some wear, they look a little more like a mini stocking than a sock. They are now super baggy, and I'm not sure how to avoid this in the future. I always knit my socks with fingering weight yarn around 2.25 and 2.5. How can I avoid them from stretching? When a yarn is thicker, do I keep my stitch number down but go down a needle? What kind of tips would you give a sock knitter? Julie from New Brunswick, Canada.
Hi, Julie. I'm just looking up. I don't know what size 2.5 millimeters is. 2.5 millimeters is size US.
Isn't that two or three?
This website keeps refreshing the page while I'm trying to scroll down and see it. It's saying size three is 3.25. It's not going.
I think these are pretty close. It's like two or 2.5.
Well, like my first instinct is with fingering weight yarn, I always use a smaller needle size than that, like a US 1, which is a 2.25. I guess that's what she's saying. I'm sorry. This is confusing only because I'm trying to read a website that was not, I was trying to get the information on the go and be all journalistic about it. And I couldn't multitask those two things, but you can't. I'm wondering if it isn't the yarn she's using. Have you ever had this problem, Casey?
I do like find sometimes some socks that I wear get stretched out, but as soon as I wash them, they spring back up.
That's the thing is, I'm also thinking that if she's using superwash yarn, which most sock yarn is superwash yarn, the Regia yarn she's talking about here, sometimes you do have to dry them for them to snap back into shape. Mm-hmm. Like if you set them out flat to dry, they will become just kind of, they'll just grow.
Yeah.
And that goes with superwash sweaters, whatever else you knit with them. But when you just wash them, they snap back into shape for you?
Yeah.
Because I've never had this problem
before. Because I hand wash all my socks anyway, even if they're superwash.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean,
you
maybe
don't
he's
them in the dryer? In the washing machine? Mm-mm. Gosh, I just wash. I turn mine inside out and just wash them.
Maybe he's also wearing them. Because I'll wear my socks. I wear my hand knit socks a couple times.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe that's what he's doing too. I don't know.
The other thing I'm thinking is, this is not the case with Julie here, but if there's a fiber in there that doesn't stretch very well, like alpaca or something, I can see that happening.
Yeah.
And if there's alpaca in the yarn, there isn't a whole lot you can do. It's just not going to give after that. But superwash, I think putting it in the dryer is kind of the answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's probably it.
Okay.
We can probably get one more question in, though.
Okay. Hi, Stacy and Casey. Love your podcast. I look forward to Thursday afternoons. I learn something every week. Can you tell me the difference between an SSK and a knit two together through the back loop? I'm doing a cozy memories blanket to use up my sock yarn scraps, and the instructions tell you to SSK. Do they lie differently, or is there no difference between the two? Thank you, Pam from Cape Cod, Massachusetts.
Hi, Pam. Whenever I see questions like this, the first thing I always think is, you waited patiently for an answer, but really all you have to do is, if you have a question like this, just whatever you're working on, just work the two things side by side and take a look at it for yourself, because it's going to be kind of how you feel about it, how you think it looks, if you want to substitute one for the other, because they do the same thing. They decrease by one stitch. Now, what else? Then you can just tink it back. My point is, like, work it, look at it, and then take those stitches out because you probably don't need them side by side. Now, I will say, just you break these stitches down. SSK and knit two together through the back loop, they're both one stitch decreases. They're both left leaning. The SSK is a stronger and I would say a cleaner looking left lean, because stitches are twisted individually and then knit through the back loop, and knit through the back loop, there is no twisting the stitches. You do get a stronger left lean. But if you work them side by side and you figure that the difference in the way that they look isn't really substantial enough for the trouble it is to work the SSK, I don't know, I've had a few people tell me how much they prefer like knitting together through the back loop over SSK. I don't think SSK is a whole lot of extra work. Do you, Casey? Mm-mm. It's like it's not a big deal to work it?
No, not at all.
It doesn't, like, you're not pulling your hair out.
Like, oh,
not
no.
Not another SSK.
I kind of like it. There's a little rhythm to it.
I think so, too. Yeah. I think so, too. But I'm going to go ahead and tell Pam that they both accomplish the same thing. Work them side by side to see how you feel about the difference in the way that they look, and then you can make a decision if the extra step of twisting those two stitches individually, because for SSK, it's slip as if to knit, slip as if to knit, knit those two stitches through the back loop, and the other one is just knit those two stitches together through the back loop.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Cool. Okay.
Okay, that's all we have time for today.
Yep.
Okay. Casey, if people want to find you online?
My website's kcknits.com, the letter K and the letter C.
Okay. And you post awesome pictures on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Kitty cat pictures.
Cats and kids and
cats
knitting.
And kids. Only things that start with a K sound.
Right.
And if you want to find, actually knitting doesn't start with a K sound. But if you want to find me online, there is, of course, the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel and verypink.com. And all of my social media buttons are there at the bottom of the page. And that is all we have time for this week. So until next week, stay warm, my friends.